Yeah, he won.
Welcome back, or welcome to the Defining Endurance Podcast. I am your host, Coach Andrew Simmons from Lifelong Endurance. And today we are talking episode 2. This is our episode focused on ingredients. Now, if you're just joining, I recommend you guys go back to episode 1. This is our Layers of Fitness series podcast. And in the last episode, we talked through a number of things, kind of set up the whole thing. I realized that this is probably for some of you feels like a big pun, but it's really not. I think this is one of the greatest ways to explain the basics of fitness and how we build and truly train our bodies. And this is a good look inside how I train athletes, but also how I explain training to athletes that do want to know a little bit more. We took a look at the mise en place, kind of the what are the basic pieces, what are the structures. I like to think of episode 1 as really the forms for the foundation. So what you actually pour the cement into to create your foundation, that's really what we have created in that first episode. This next one, we're going to look at the ingredients. We're talking about general fitness, strength, talk a lot about this capacity idea and kind of some of the ratios. How are things broken up in events? How do we change training? Then we talk about one of my favorite things. Sprinkles. Yeah, sprinkles. Not just the things that go on top of ice cream, but the things that go inside to make that cake go from just a plain vanilla cake to the one and only confetti cake, which is one of my favorites. But what are sprinkles in this case? We will get to that. But in our last episode, we broke down how general fitness is built. And now we're going to kind of expand on that topic. As I said, the foundation is now being poured, and we're not just going to look at cake as a general concept. We're talking devil's food cake, sponge cake, bunts, everyone's favorite, maybe even a chantilly, if we're going to really get into it. And what we're doing is we're getting specific about what we're doing. We're not just talking about moving from that general to specific fitness in terms of, you know, Jane is doing 3 runs a week. Well, how do we go from being able to run, say, a 4-hour marathon to a 3.5-hour marathon? What are the things that need to happen there besides just more? Right, this idea of more is a big trap for a lot of athletes. If there was one trap that I see over and over, is always the too hard, too often. There's some misconceptions about strength training that I tend to have to work through over and over with athletes. I promise that strength training is not going to add bulk. We'll talk specifically about that a little bit later in the episode. But let's go back. Let's answer the first question here. What are we baking? What are we trying to make? Are we trying to build a marathoner, a half marathoner, an ultra marathoner, or a sprinter? You know, understanding what we're really training for is key. And so taking the time to actually sit down, whether you're a coach or an athlete, and say, okay, what is this goal race for me? If you're going to race Big Sur, or you're going to race a downhill revel race or something, those two things are wildly different races. Are you going to race Pikes Peak Marathon? Those are 3 different races that require 3 different kinds of training. Are they all marathons? Yes. But if we try to treat them all the same, then we're just being very general. We're not being specific. So this is all about specific demands. So let's look at this from the cake standpoint. Vanilla, chocolate, raspberry. As you look at the training, right? What specific demands are placed on your body for it to perform best? And maybe that's about choosing the right race. Are you a road marathoner? Then maybe not go over to Pikes, unless that's a bucket list item and you say, I'm going to change my training completely, if that's the goal. If you're trying to qualify for the Olympic trials, probably not going to throw Pikes Peak in the middle there, unless you're also a mountain runner who happens to have stupendous fitness in other places. And so again, don't make a chocolate cake if you don't like chocolate. So let's just be really clear that when it comes down to it, you are going to be predisposed to a certain kind of training in some senses. You can do well at mountain races. You could do great at road races. And so maybe trail running is something that you do for fun and enjoyment, which is the whole point of this sport. But if you're trying to say, I want to reach my genetic potential, know where to put your time and your energy. Cool. So let's take a look. We're actually going to break down this cake. I went through the process of trying to think of, okay, what are all the ingredients, right? The cake demands really that these ingredients be in place. Otherwise, we're not really building a cake. We're building something else entirely. So when we're thinking about this cake, the flour is your mileage. The eggs are your strength. The sugar is your speed work. The baking powder is the supplementary work, right? Think of it as like your strides, your drills. That's the baking powder. That's the thing that gives it that extra little punch, that gives it that little bit of rise, that fluffiness. So it makes it great. But once we have all of these ingredients laid out and in our plan, we have to start training. We got to build our batter, if you will. You know, a good cake takes time to build. And before we can, you know, really pop this baby in the oven to cook, we need to make sure it's all combined in the correct order. You know, you can just throw everything into a bowl, mix it, pour it into a form, and throw it in the oven. But that's not that's a general cake. That's a basic cake. We're not here to build basic cakes, people. The cake base, as you think of it, before it's decorated and built, is on, you know, really, it's built on one premise. This idea here is really built on the idea of aerobic capacity. This idea of capacity is at the core of really all training. And this is really the core of this episode right here. Imagine playing Frisbee with your friends, and you're the type of athlete that can absolutely crank out some amazing long plays, some short sprints. You're good for the first half of the game. By the time you get to that second half, you are dogged, you are dead, you are done. You've got nothing left, and you can't match the speed of other players. You're not able to go any further. You're kind of hit your limit. And think about this in racing. You know, you can't move your legs any faster. You hit a wall in the marathon. You're done. Why? Did you run out of fuel? Did you lack training? What kind of training specifically? Again, let's get specific here. Is it really speed work that prevented you from being strong in that second half of the race? Is that why you're not quote unquote fast? That's the trap. That's the trap that so many get caught in, is that they're like, oh, I need more workouts. No, you don't need more workouts to be faster later in the race. You need capacity. You need endurance. You need the ability, right? You need to instill the ability to go longer. And you almost have to create more so that when you're doing workouts and things like that, you can handle a higher intensity load. So we're going to talk load versus capacity here for a second. So when you're completely out of gas, sometimes that is a fueling and pacing issue. Too hard, too early. Yep, we've all blown up in a race and ran under our potential. But if you're running at your potential, your possible potential, and you run out of gas before you want to, then the reality is that there's a load capacity issue here. You are placing a greater load. So your assumed load, what you thought you were capable of, doesn't match your training. So if you think that you're in 40-minute 10K shape and you've been training and running, you know, at those splits, but you haven't done the long runs to match it, you haven't done some of the longer work, you've just been running pretty hard and doing a lot of workouts, you're probably surviving your workouts. You're not thriving in those workouts. This is where that aerobic capacity piece becomes super, super important. Without it, you're not going to continue to build fitness. That is where everybody comes and says, oh, well, you know, clearly base phase, but you also have to maintain it. So spending some time early on in a cycle, especially if you've gone through multiple training cycles where you've just kind of maintained mileage, you've been doing two workouts a week, like it is worthwhile periodically to just go through a 4 to 6 week base phase where you're doing really minimal workouts. And you're just trying to build that capacity up, get that mileage number up without workouts, and just have a good zone two foundation that you can then build on and do bigger workouts. If you were doing 5x a K before, how do we get to 7 to 8x a K? Well, we have to build the foundation. We've got to put that in place. And so that is all about this cake batter idea, is like that batter is so important. And maybe not just look at this as baking one layer of a cake. How do you build 2-3 layers so that you're super strong, so that you've got the fitness that you need to be able to do the bigger workouts that you believe that you're capable of? That is how we take those big jumps. So let's kind of take a step back here. When people think that they need more hard work, more speed work, intervals, so that you can be fast enough later in the game, the reality is the lack of capacity you have the whole game. what you are starting off with is what you're going to end with on race day. And so pacing is, of course, important. So you have to understand how to balance that load. So let's think for a second, what are the loads that we're really placing on the body? And so I want you guys to think of it like this. We can place a load in terms of strength, and there's many different kinds of stress, and we will talk about this. We will dive into a little bit more of how do we find and understand when we've hit too much or when we've got not enough. So let's take a jump here. When you lack the capacity to run throughout the entire race, or you're not able to complete your workouts and things like that, that's a load capacity issue. And I want you guys to think that when we run into problems in training, we hit a wall, falling apart, it's often that we apply a load that our body doesn't have the capacity to manage. So this can show up in a few unique ways. Think of it like this. Too many miles for 8 to 10 days in a row is going to create acute stress. And that can make you feel beat up, tired, and maybe lead to, you know, some muscle strains, maybe some significant soreness, right? We see this a lot when people try to rush back into training. You may be able to adapt to it, but if you don't, we're going to start getting into what we call chronic overload. So too many miles, let's say, for 3 to 4 weeks in a row can create chronic stress that can lead to stress reactions, fractures. If we keep going, we keep digging. If we don't get the stress fractures or the stress reactions, we can start to see some issues with overtraining. And then that really becomes an issue that becomes really ugly. It becomes hormonal, and we start to really kind of drive ourselves down into a really deep hole. So now that we think about this, if we replaced too many miles with too many strength workouts or too intense of a strength workout, we're overloading. There is a certain amount of load that's important. We'll talk about a paperclip analogy in later episodes. But what I want you guys to think about is that, yes, we have to apply a reasonable amount of stress in training to get an adaptation. But the best kind of stress that you can apply is the one that you're going to recover from. And so that's the balance in training. That's why I have a job as a coach, is to make sure that I'm applying a load to you as an athlete that's going to elicit an adaptation. And so that small window of eliciting an adaptation, we do too little, it takes too long to get the adaptation, or we're going to respond to it. It doesn't actually dig enough of a hole that you can fill back in. We go on the other side of that and we go to too much. We can do that every once in a while, right? We can go get lost on a run for too long or things like that, and we can recover from it and kind of get back into our normal rhythm. But if we stay on that far side, that too much, whether that's too much too often or too much, say, in our long runs or things like that, and we can't recover from it even inside a single week, let alone a month, then we're not actually going to be able to get an adaptation come race day, which, again, that's the day we eat the cake, and that cake shows up, right? And so if we have ingredients that are missing, that's absolutely going to show up on race day. You guys are getting the analogies here. I can feel it. And so let's talk about this. The key to success in baking a perfect cake is balance. You have to have the right ratios of ingredients. You need to make slow, steady increases versus changing numerous variables all at once. If you're truly trying to nail down the perfect recipe, you have to go through small changes in one ingredient. Bake a cake. Make another small adjustment. Bake a cake. And you have to taste it. You kind of have to go and actually analyze. This is why journaling is so important. So if you guys haven't heard me say it, journaling is one of the most important things that you can do as an athlete, is you're trying to assess and understand, how do I take these next steps forward? What do I own? What do I need to do? And what I want you guys to realize is that, no, your chance to eat that cake isn't always going to be race day. We leave too much to race day too often. By the time we get to a race, to be honest, we should be on autopilot. So here's the reality. Your workouts are your opportunities to taste your cake, to put it up and bake it and see kind of what's going on. You're not baking a whole cake. It's a small cake. It's a little baby cake. This is a personal size pizza, if you will. Something small, that kind of pie. That's what we're talking about. Something small, something that you can have in bite sizes. You try to bring it all together just for race day, and there's too many variables. You use your workouts, you use your long runs to kind of suss these things out. All right, so deep question here, guys. Why did the chicken cross the road? to get all the gains, clearly. I'm kidding. I was trying to find an egg joke here and a good transition. And so, yeah, enough with the knee slappers. Let's dive deep into the ingredient near and dear to my heart, strength training. If you followed along earlier, strength training is the egg. It's the binder. It's the thing that holds a lot of things together. It's what gives a cake its cakiness. It's, you know, moistness. I hate that word, but it's what it does. And I really believe that this is something that sets everything else up. This is, again, the form in the foundation. These pieces, the ingredients, this is the one that I think is, you know, that's the glue. It holds it all together. It's what makes it strong. So strength training. You know, what I see here a lot is that the knee gets blamed for way more than it should. By majority, the knee gets a bad rap because it is above the ankle and below the hip. It is a center joint of which has to resist so much loading force, twisting, and really reactionary things, along with keeping us stable. And as people that really move in one direction, that is the worst part of our sport. It's the fact that we only move forward. We do very little lateral work. And when we do get injured and we do get sore and we do start to see a shortness in our gait and we start to see that we're kind of chopping our steps more than we should, we see a low cadence. So much of that comes from not having good strength, good mobility. So let's bring it back. That chicken that crossed the road, it's the egg. This egg that holds everything together is strength training. And if we don't have the basic strength we need, we're going to see injury, hands down. This is a sport where you're going to get injured if you don't have the strength. And by majority, PT is strength work. Take a look now. Search it up. Pull up in your Instagram. If you search, you know, hashtag strength training, you know, or whatever for runners, you're going to find a PT on the end of that saying, please do strength. Please, please, please. Now, granted, you don't do strength. You keep them in business. And I really like my PT friends being in business, but I don't like my athletes being injured. There's a balance there. And I think whether it's someone like myself as a coach that can be a guide or someone like Dr. Riley, Coach Carbs, they are two great resources that exist on Instagram to give you guys insights, but also use their services, hire them, get a round of strength training, do a couple sessions with them to learn about what your specific body needs. This is where great investment early on in your training, or even early on in a training cycle, can shift the entire thing so that you stay in the cycle and can stay training at 100%. And I promise that you guys aren't going to bulk up. This is like the silliest thing that I hear from runners, like, oh my God, I'm going to bulk up. Good. But you're not. You have to eat to build that kind of muscle. And it is a constant, but also very conscious type of thinking and type of training that you have to do. You want to build muscle if you're going to train to build muscle and be a bodybuilder. And it takes a specific kind of training. Well, that kind of training isn't the same kind of training that you guys need to do as runners. You're not going to go and do, you know, supersets and things like that with really heavy weights, with really low reps to build that kind of bulky big muscle. It's just not useful, but it's also not going to come onto your body like that. It's not like overnight muscle gets shown up by a light switch because you had, you know, 100 grams of protein yesterday. It's not how it works. You have to be very diligent, very focused for months and months and months. And even then, to add 2 to 3 pounds of muscle to a runner takes a really long time. And that's because it's considered concurrent training. And what I mean by concurrent training is that when we do so much aerobic running and work, we build really lean muscle. And so to add another kind of muscle, you know, is very difficult. That is why it can be very difficult to do something like CrossFit and run. You're breaking your body down in a really, you know, high intensity interval training way. It creates a lot of, I don't want to say damage, but the byproduct is a lot of soreness and eventually adaptation. Running does much the same thing, but they can't really walk hand in hand with each other. You can't go and train hard one day in the gym and lift and do a really, you know, high intense CrossFit workout, and then show up and expect to be recovered the next day to go have an intense track workout or even a moderately hard aerobic run. It's your body just needs time to be able to, you know, go in a direction. You can build muscle and run. You can do those things, but you're not going to lift like an absolute bodybuilder and run like a pro. Those two things don't happen together. There is a balance in which mileage and intensity are balanced by the amount of strength training. And that's why strength training needs to come so early on, because when you're just doing base work or you're doing workouts that aren't super intense, that's when you can be a little bit more sore from strength training. And it's not going to hold you back from really training at your highest and best as the closer you get to the race. Again, general to specific. If you were building general fitness and general strength, then by the end, we can be doing some very specific strength and very specific aerobic training work. So let's bring this back. I think that due to the nature of our sport, because we do very little movement, lateral movement as runners, we develop weaknesses in lateral areas, lateral aspects of the hip, inner thigh, IT band, you know, posterior tibialis, you know, outside peroneals, you know, shin splints and things like that. Now, shin splints, I don't always think as, you know, a strength issue. Sometimes that's a load capacity issue as we start back up and our muscles aren't yet ready to handle the pounding and mileage, and our mechanics aren't quite in a place where they're good and efficient again. So again, one of the tricks that I will give you guys is that if you are coaching yourself to come back, mileage is not your best friend. And the reason mileage is not your best friend, minutes is that what you can do in 20 minutes at the very start of a cycle versus the very end of a cycle is completely different. And arresting yourself to a specific mileage mark may not always be your best tool. Because if you're doing, you know, 8 minute miles and you go out and do 20 minutes, that's 2.5 miles. But if you said, I got to do 3, that extra, I know it sounds silly, 4 minutes, but realistically speaking, that's a fifth. That's 20% more. That's a 20% jump. Now, if you did that every day for a week, but you're only doing 20 minutes the day before, the week before, the month before, that 20% jump is going to catch up with you. And so it's either going to force you into a rest day. Again, go back to episode 1, luxury of control. You are either going to choose to stop and take a rest day because you're tired, or you're going to be forced to stop by an injury or such extreme tiredness that you have to stop. So 20% doesn't seem like a big deal. Pull it back. Be conscious of where you are and what really needs to happen. How long is your runway and is it realistic for what you want to do? Coming back into the strength world of things, we tend to lump strength training into this just kind of general thing of how, what is supplementary training? And I'll give you guys something to think about here is that strength might be the worst word we can use, because strength is what gives the connotation of big, bulky bodybuilders. What I really want you guys to develop in the weight room is a sense of control. And this means slowing down. This means working through the eccentric phase of most of your movements and being able to control that lateral hip movement. And not just being able, you can do it very fast, but can you do it slow and controlled? If you go and look at most movements and you break it down and you say, wow, what am I doing here as a runner? You're probably being asked to slowly control and move and be able to almost isometrically hold most of your movements. And isometrically hold just means holding it and just being able to hold that specific position. If I told you guys to hold your top running form on one leg with your knee up at 90, how long could you really do it? Some of you probably think, oh, I could do it for 5 minutes, coach. I'd love to see you do a minute each night as you brush your teeth in that 90-90 position with one arm up, opposite arm, opposite leg, nice and high, switch. As you're doing it, you can brush your teeth and do that. Now, I promise that you're going to be tired and you're going to find, ooh, my ankles don't give me as good a balance as I want. And I'm barefoot and all those different things. That's kind of how we look at strength training. Is strength training is control. On my end of the spectrum, I'm not trying to get you better delts and better pecs. I'm trying to get you better control. I'm trying to get you better mobility. I'm trying to get you to be in a place where you're consistently pain-free. Because if we build strength in the right areas, great running form and great mechanics aren't far behind. So the reality is that your quote-unquote strength training that you're doing is both preventative, but it's also the thing that's going to keep you in the game. It's going to help you also be more efficient. It's free speed. And it's almost as effective as going out and doing speed work, because going out and doing speed work on crappy mechanics is, you know, it's kind of like putting, you know, bad tires on a race car. Like, great, it can go fast, but it can't really do what it's meant to do. It's being hamstrung. It's being pulled back and held back. So put good tires on your car, right? You put good shoes on your feet. Same idea here. I'm going to give you guys something. I have 6 movements here. I'll try to talk through them slow. I'll put them in the show notes. But these are my 6 movements. If someone said, hey, what are your top 6 movements that you'd give any runner? Is it an exhaustive list? No. But lateral band walks is my number one. It's just kind of a basic opener and primer. Some of you guys get these as monster walks. You know, everybody's got a different name for them. It's a lateral band walk. You've got them over your ankles, over your toes, over your knees. We're going, you know, quarter squat down and back. Isometric seated band hold. You're going to be sitting down. You're going to be putting that band over your knees. It's got to be a hard one. And you're going to spread those knees to kind of neutral. And we are really going to recruit those glutes. This is a great way to, this is something you can even do sitting at your desk. If you're listening to me right now, put that band over your knees and just see how long you can hold those knees apart in a good neutral position. Promise you, you'll feel it in your glutes. Number 3 here, a walking lunge. One of the most powerful movements out there. This is not only a great movement for going for full mobility, this is also just a great single leg balance builder when you're doing that transition from right foot to left foot as your front foot. That phase where you're actually moving through it is such a powerful. How does your body position change? Can you handle that movement in that position? Are you really wobbly there? Are you wobbly with weight at your sides? You can top rack this position. You can go overhead with it to create more of a balance type movement. Walking lunges are amazing. And if you're like, walking lunges are easy, all right, do them in reverse. Do a reverse walking lunge and tell me how that goes. That is a tougher movement than you're giving it credit for. It requires you to have great proprioception and understand your body and space. You start to add movement, weight to that movement. Now it's becoming a really great movement that you can work on the eccentric phase of, not only just landing, but absorbing that force. So that's we're only number 3. We've got lateral band walks, isometric seated band holds, walking lunges. Number 4, Copenhagen plank. This is the juice. I love this movement. I give this to my high school kids. I give this to my adults. You're going to put, you know, top foot on a bench. You're going to be in a side plank. The other one needs to come underneath the bench. And you're basically trying to sandwich that lower leg to that foot. You can make it easier by kind of bending that top leg and getting that whole lower leg onto the top of the bench. If you look up this movement, you'll understand what I'm saying. This works the inner thighs. This is super, super effective. You'll feel this in your glutes. You'll feel it in your inner thighs. If you are someone that constantly gets groin pulls or just feels like, you know, you've got a lot of valgus, those knees kind of tipping inward, this can be a great movement to help build strength, to help support the inside of those knees. So again, this is just a super effective, potent movement. Number 5, a hip abduction side plank. This is kind of the inverse. Lower leg is going to be bent in a side plank, and we're going to be now lifting that top leg off. This is a toughie. This is a tough one to hold. So this kind of falls into the isometric. You can make it active with a little bit of movement up and down. This one's tough. 30, 45 seconds is plenty for a movement like this. We're building, you know, again, that fatigue resistance, that control in our strength. We're not trying to, none of this has required a barbell yet. And then the last movement here is going to be quadruped series. Now, this is technically a series of 4 movements, but the quadruped series is about mobility. It is about a little bit of endurance and a little bit of strength. You've got everything from a donkey kick to, you know, a fire hydrant to hip circles, forward and reverse. Those are the 4 movements. And the reality here is that we're working on trying to stay mobile, keep that back flat, and really just take that hip through its full range of motion. This is a great way to get warmed up, great way to build strength and build some of that initial fatigue resistance you need to get off the ground and get rehab from PT. If you're in that position, this is one of the first ones they give you because you're not even standing for these. You're on all fours. Now, I know I said I'd keep these episodes short. We're hitting the 30-minute mark, and I want to get through a few more things here. So let me speed it up a little bit. As I said, this is not an exhaustive list. These are just my commonly integrated movements in strength training for all of my athletes at almost any age. And what I want to be able to do here is be able to transition away from the idea of strength training and aerobic capacity and talk for just a second about how we kind of start looking at fitness, but in terms of how do we look at our event when we think about our fitness. So I'm going to talk about DOE for a second. And when we think about DOE, you may have heard a, 70% hydrated DOE or things like that. And when we think about that, what we're really saying here is that for 100 grams of flour, we're going to integrate 70 grams of water. This will all make sense in a second. Well, the same thing applies when we start looking at fitness. We want to balance our fitness in such a way that we are perfectly adapted for our event. The longer the distance we plan to run, the more aerobic stimulus we need. And so the ratios of these ingredients change as we move around the spectrum from 100 meters to 100 miles. And what I mean by the ratios, I'm talking about how much of your event is aerobic, how much of it is anaerobic, how much of it is mechanical. Those are the three pieces that really come into play. And when we think very fast, 100 meters, it's not a ton aerobic. It's not even, it's not even 70% aerobic, right? It's actually going to be more anaerobic because it's short. It's a very short sprint. And so that type of energy system is what's needed. We start to talk the half marathon, the marathon and beyond. By majority, we're talking 92 to 96% of that event is aerobic. And so let's talk about this here. If we're familiar with the aerobic and anaerobic systems, you know that we've got two main fuel sources. And I'll just kind of shout out one of our previous episodes here. Episode 79 is the biology of fatigue. We go through the Krebs cycle, we talk lactic acid, aerobic and anaerobic metabolism, and more. And we're not making sourdough, so we're not going to worry about fermentation and anaerobic things. And so we're not going to cover that in depth here. But what you need to walk away from here is the basic understanding that you can train different energy systems analogously, that's a fun word, basically simultaneously, and change the ratios of your ingredients as you build your cake. So let's take a pause. This is kind of a good time as any to review. Depending on the event you're training for, you need to make time to build some sort of general fitness, and we can consider this our cake base. As we transition to building specific kinds of cake or specific event, we need to get specific in our training so we can create predictable and replicable, and dare we say, repeatable results. Consistency is far better than hitting the lottery occasionally. We need to balance our fitness and ultimately create a recipe that will give us great results, which is why most people follow a recipe the first couple of times they start baking. So let's get back to it. Now that we have a certain event and understand that certain events are majority aerobic or anaerobic, we can also use these ratios to determine where we can get the most bang for our buck and where we should spend the majority of our time training and what we should be training. Let's look at the marathon. This is kind of one of the areas that I feel super confident as a coach. You give me almost anybody and I'll be able to help them improve. I feel very confident in my ability to work with marathon runners. The marathon is 92% aerobic, 6% anaerobic, and 2% mechanical. Let's take a hard pause and dissect what's happening here. 92% aerobic and 6% anaerobic. This is where people get trapped. Don't I need more speed work than 6%? Might I remind you that aerobic and anaerobic are not about workouts. Anaerobic and aerobic are metabolic systems. They are what we produce. It's how things happen inside our body. anaerobic is not simultaneous with speed work. So you got to get that out of your head that anaerobic means speed work. You can still, I mean, what do you think threshold is? Aerobic threshold is still aerobic work. It's just high aerobic work. It lives on a spectrum where it's not fully anaerobic. It is aerobic in nature. And so going out and doing threshold, half marathon pace type work, and we go out and do 4x a mile, it's not anaerobic. You're not anaerobic nearly at all inside 4x a mile at marathon to half marathon pace. Now, we start getting really fast, 200 meters, 400 meters maybe, and we're doing really high intense repeats with a lot of rest. Yeah, we're going to get anaerobic, but 6% of our time should be spent inside our entire training cycle focusing on anaerobic work. That's almost nothing. Two workouts a week, you know, for 16 weeks, that's 32 workouts. 6% of that is maybe touching for two workouts inside 32 where we need to do any anaerobic work. Okay, now you're starting to see how this all comes together. The majority of the work that we need to do for marathoning and training for that event is aerobic. So not only is it just mileage, because mileage alone is going to get you to the finish line, but it's not going to get you there very quickly. So if we're trying to kind of get faster, go back to that original analogy of 4 hours down to 3.5 hours in the marathon, what we have to be able to do is kind of look at that. And so if you want to improve from 4 hours in the marathon to 3:30 in one cycle, you can attribute 27 minutes and 36 seconds of your improvement, of that 30-minute improvement. 27 minutes and 36 seconds are due to increasing your aerobic capacity. 1 minute and 48 is due to your anaerobic capacity increasing. And about 40 seconds is worth about 2% mechanical improvement. You got a little bit better. So the reality is that about 2 minutes and 30 seconds is what the last two portions of a 30-minute improvement are. You got a little bit more anaerobically fit. You got a little bit better mechanically at running. Now, I want to be clear on that last note that if your mechanics are very poor and you're not strong enough to complete your long runs comfortably, you know, you've got some injuries kind of throughout this, the mechanical component is likely higher and one of your bigger limiters in your ability to get the most benefit. So again, this goes back to our egg conversation from earlier. Your strength training is related to your mechanics and could be worth way more than 2%. And so solving that strength training problem early means that 2% could be more like 5-7%. If your mechanics are quite poor. So as we build up, this is the argument for strength training, so you can actually get the aerobic work in. Hopefully you guys are starting to see how this adds up. We're getting close. So what I want you guys to kind of think through is that we now have most of our ingredients kind of put together. I haven't talked about this last piece of speed work. I'm actually going to shift that into the next episode. But I want to talk for a second about the sprinkles. I promised I would, and I don't want to leave you guys hanging. The addition of this neural work, you know, blood flow work, things like that. Like strides aren't just there to run fast and hopefully make you feel good for the next day. It actually does something that goes back into our caveman brains. I'm a firm believer that doing something inside of our workout and not just leaving those strides for after is a great way for us to get an increase in blood volume by doing this work. That caveman thing is, and I'll explain it, is that when we go and do something that feels harsh or abrupt and it kind of, it's uncomfortable to go do that in the middle of what's supposed to be an aerobic run. And we're talking 10 by 20 seconds on 40 seconds. And these 20 seconds are maybe 5K to mile-ish effort. What we're really doing here is this goes back to the root of our brain where it's like, oh, you're preparing to hunt. You know, something is happening. This is a very primal part of us. And so our body's response to that is, hey, we're going to increase blood volume for a couple days because it looks like the hunt is on. And, this is a great way for us to increase blood volume before a workout. It's a great way to kind of clear the legs out. And it's just a good way to change up cadence, change up how our bodies are moving, and is just a great way to increase your ability to consistently turn over your legs, even when it's not the most desirable or most comfortable thing for you to do. And so I like to think of this work as sprinkles because doing these things, these little things, they're the sprinkles on top. They're the sprinkles inside your cake that when you cut into, you're like, oh, that's cool. I got sprinkles in my cake. And I want you to think that strides are different than the neural kind of blood flow work. If you've worked with me and you've gotten the blood flow work in there, what I'm really trying to do is kind of give your training a little bit of a bump. I probably put them in there for 4 to 6 weeks just as a way to kind of keep the body moving and constantly kind of have something throughout your week, especially if you're someone that's been doing a lot of uphill work and things like that where we're not getting great turnover. This is how we're kind of keeping all of the training elements in balance. Strides. Strides are really something that can be great at the end. I do this a lot with my high school group because they're still learning how to get the basics of training and trying to give them 10 by 20 seconds. They're going to way overrun these and push them way too hard for what needs to be done. So we leave strides to the end because they're already kind of tired. And we're going to do 4 or 5 of these things on a walk back recovery. Strides are really about 80 to 90% of max, you know, 10, 12 seconds. It's about getting some turnover in. And again, practice running fast when you're tired, practice running fast at the end. It's just a good habit to get into. You also do these before a workout most of the time. And this is, again, a great way to just get the body in motion and get the body moving in the direction that you want it to, so that when you get into your faster session, it doesn't feel so abrupt and rough on your body. So we have talked through a lot of the ingredients. We've talked about sugar, water, flour, everything here, except the sugar piece. I will admit that that is going to come at the end or the start of this next episode. And I wanted to really make sure that we understood these ingredients completely. I could talk individually about each one of these, but the whole point of this is that we're kind of breaking this all out. And I want you guys to understand and give you guys a foundation of thinking when it comes to training and how do you interpret what's happening. If you're paying close attention, you know that there is so much more inside these. I could talk, you know, explicitly about why strength training, what movements, what body parts need to be engaged to do well. Should you be landing on your midfoot? Should you wear shoes when you're in the gym? There's a lot of things that I could dissect there. And we can definitely do episodes in the future. What helps me the most is, what do you guys like about this? This is kind of my chance at the end of the episode here to ask that you guys give me feedback. Shoot me an email, andrew@lifelongendurance.com. This is a great way for me to help give more information. What questions are lingering in your brain besides the sugar speed work question that I keep hinting at? What else kind of left you going, oh, I want more about this. Why didn't we touch on this? And so I want you guys to just remember that all we're trying to do is always move from a very general to specific type of training. And the understanding that it's going to take time. Consistency is our biggest factor here. And the second biggest factor is patience. So with that said, I'm going to ask for some patience from you guys. You know, I left out speed work. I will talk about it, but I wanted to give you guys something that was really cool. As I was doing some research on speed work for our episode, just to pull all the pieces together, I said, what is the role of sugar in baking? And the role that sugar is playing, you know, my assumption was that it's just there for sweetness. But the reality is that the bond between sugar and water allows sugar to actually lock in the moisture so that items such as cakes, muffins, brownies, whatever it is, don't dry out too quickly. So think of that. Your speed work is your sugar. Your sugar is the bond between sugar and water. Well, we have to think that speed work ties together our aerobic component. And that aerobic capacity piece is buffered and it actually is made better, built stronger. Stronger bond is what is ultimately going to create the athlete, that bulletproof athlete on race day. So with that said, we will talk sugar in the next episode. I appreciate you guys hanging out with me for this whole episode. I hope it was helpful. Send me an email with your comments. I appreciate it. And we'll see you guys back here for episode number 3. See ya later.